is it would warm up nicely. Then they take the bag on, and of course the temperature would drop much more than the core memories could accept. It was too quick a drop. They didn't cool it gradually. I expect it.
Only after the fact.
Okay. The BDP-8i bus, the Plus 3 bus, was the only one who had a link spec that.
Oh, I have to tell you a real short, up-to-date story related to that. Out in Albuquerque, we were producing monitors, right? So we put them in a Helmholtz coil to make it magnetic free because of the Earth's magnetic field. So we shipped them all up here to Blasey, and they all failed. So we readjusted the field down in Albuquerque inside the test chamber to be facing east in Boston. And from then on, they all passed. And that's a true story.
Hey, it's like Columbus. I mean, he redefined his goals, and he was successful.
Well, the other thing that happened was John and the guys, remember you were going to do the test diagnostics so for manufacturing, it would point out the quadrant of the module, where it was, and you were trying to get, and this was near the end of the 8s and the starts of the 11, down to the level of the chip and exactly where it was. And you started.
No.
When was it you were doing it?
I never for the 11. Because we did functional, because I was caught in the same situation. I started that thing with, here's the instruction set. Jim's laying the chips down. And so I basically did a functional bottoms-up test. You know, let me do one instruction, make sure it works. What's the first one?
Yeah.
And so I did an incremental test that way. So we really never did that type of isolation. Now, we did for the module test.
That's
we had people at the module test level that ran the testers that would try to go into component isolation.
That's what I'm talking
the
about.
GR, was it the GR testers?
It was long before. It was something you guys were trying to invent.
Yeah, it was the AMT testers, something like that.
I can't remember what it was. Yeah. Automatic module testers.
Automatic module testers. In fact, we hired a whole group of guys to do those module
tests. That's right, and I remember you said it was going to take something like 25 man years to do the whole thing, and that's why
we hired
had to get a
people.
Big crew in. Yeah.
And maybe we should invite it in. To discuss that.
You know, I simply...
Wasn't Ed the guy?
Ed Gianetto? No. Yeah. John Friedrich was in the early component test. Yeah, I gave his name. I gave John Friedrich and Bruce Burgess. I hired Bruce Burgess to do some of the component incoming tests for the ICs, and Friedrich was doing the module test.
Where's Earl Height?
He lasted what in... He's in the book.
Marketing.
He's in marketing. He got in telecom, and he sucked him in. Got him into marketing. And
he did all my diagnostics.
For the disc.
Yeah.
He did all the disc stuff.
Okay, so if you pulled everybody back together again, do you think you could do it all over?
Not in this environment?
Think you could invent some new technology if you brought the old team together?
Let me argue.
Had some resources?
Let me disagree. You absolutely could. Because I see, as I've been listening here today, they're all the same old iconoclastic spirit is right here.
You guys sound like you got some magic, you know.
So, there's no magic.
You left alone. You make your own.
Well, but I claim this group would see to it that it got left alone, even today.
True.
So I disagree that...
Yeah, but it's very much harder to get alone nowadays.
Of course you couldn't do it again. Of course you couldn't do it again literally for some other reasons. We've all got different interests and things like that. Sure, for that reason. But from the point of view of your question, I believe this same crew would do roughly the same thing, and they would have fun, push everybody else out, and say, to hell with it, and get going, and do it again. And by the way, by extension, any other similar group would work just fine today, too, and there are some still in depth.
So then perhaps...
still doing it. It's just that, sure enough, they're crowded out by... Just loads of layers.
I really think the guys have the same capability of the 11 situation. I won't name them because it's being taped.
See again, though?
There's a new machine group that's working on a new machine. And I won't name them because it's being taped.
Sure.
But I think they've got the same type of possibility.
Yeah.
And it's really neat.
I think within DEC, to recreate that, chemistry is harder as we've gotten bigger. The bureaucracy is stifling to some extent.
And the only way you could do it would be the isolation. All I'm saying is that this group or any similar group would see to it that it got itself isolated So you don't have to worry so much about the problem.
Sort of back to the
even
future.
Though it's very absolutely real. I mean, I spent all my damn time.
I think it depends. If you could put the right team together, you could do it again. The team would have to be empowered to do it, which I think that team was at that
absolutely.
Stage.
Yeah.
It was empowered. Could we just get rid of the sun right behind you?
Oh, you've got to keep it in your eyes. This was Henry Krause's office in them days, and every time he came in to buy something,
the yellow,
for him, that's blinded, that. Remember?
Oh, that's this right. is also
this
where
was
the blood
Henry
comes. Is there any reason for that? Is there a coincidence here?
I can see now. Hi there, Jim.
Okay, then as a follow-on question to that, what is specific to PDP-11s, you all have been really active in the current computer industry, and you've all seen a lot over the past 20 years. So perhaps just in your own personal opinions, is the PDP-11 architecture, are the systems still a viable answer within the marketplace today? And if so, why? What might need to change or what might need to stay the same?
It's still viable in the same way that you sell DC-3s this very day in South America.
The aircraft.
Yeah. It pushes out
architecture.
There's new stuff that's coming along that pushes it further and further away from what you might call the center. But
the fact is an extension of the PDP-11 architecture. While the 11 was a total separation from the 8 architecture, and the 7 and 9 was just... So the VAX is, to me, very much an extension. Anybody who knows how to read the 11 instruction set, you sit down and read a VAX instruction set in no time flat.
Absolutely. I don't understand that either.
I have a friend who...
Well, we never did the 11, all right.
I have a friend who's still a PDP-11 customer,
you didn't understand
by the way. Let's have a little talk. A friend of mine's a PDP-11 customer today, and he was asking me if we had a new, faster J11 chipset that we would be willing to sell him now. He says he's willing to pay more money for that, and it's a product that he can use and sell today, which is kind of surprising to me. So apparently there's some customers out there.
I think it all boils down to what it is we could make it for. You know, how much is it going to cost? I think there will always be an application base out there for this kind of thing if we can make it cheap enough. That's really boils down to.
Today you can put the VAX, once you know how to do a VAX on a single chip, I'm not sure you can do the 11 any cheaper, appreciably cheaper than you can do a VAX. So then why do 11 if you can do a VAX for roughly the same price?
Well, tech here, your software investment for one thing.
Okay, okay.
The issue
for that reason.
The issue I heard wasn't the price, it was speed. The price wasn't the issue, it was
you can turn
the
speed
performance,
anything out.
The performance of the 11.
Okay.
In what
kind probably
of
saving the
investment
of the software and
there are still
control.
Several cases where the 11 is faster. I mean, somebody mentioned APT. All the manufacturing plants, there's still a significant number that still use PDP-11s to do the job because they can't get a big enough VAX to do the same job.
Yeah.
Well, I think what happened, the VAX operating system consumes so much memory and everything to get the job done.
All right.
And you only use 10%
of it.
The thing that cracks me up is everybody talking about the PMAX and the VIF. Hell, the first RISC machine for all intents and purposes was the 8s. Because it had a very limited instruction set, and it ran fast.
That's right.
And it runs just as fast as them suckers do now.
Well, the RISC has got two processors. One worries about doing instructions out of registers, and the other one worries about loading the registers.
But if you had 2-8 stuff doing the same thing, 2-8 type processors, you could get the same damn thing out. Because Don White and the guys did one. In fact, if you talk to Don, when they looked at it, they were laughing about it. On how much, you know, him and Louie had done a VIST machine many years ago. And if you look at the 11s, it's the same thing. It runs faster because it does a hell of a lot less than the operating system, and that's the thing that bogs it down.
You get the counter argument, you could do a strip down operating system for a VAX.
Yeah, did it work? The micro VAX bullshit, it didn't work at all, did it, John?
No.
Okay.
Well, how many operating systems we have on the PDP-11. One of the flaws of the PDP-11 is we had something like 8 or 9 operating systems.
That's true.
We came out with a new operating system with a new machine.
Yeah.
We could never qualify the damn thing.
That's true.
So, I mean, the goodness of the VAX was a single operating system.
Yes, I agree. I'm not arguing.
You paid a price for that.
Yeah, and you pay a price for
it. Yep. Complexity's all in the operating system.
Yep.
But in, you know, talking about the market a little, I think our market was OEM and process control.
Sure.
Yeah. In those days.
You know, if we were to go back and look at it, the first machines did not have a mass storage device going out on them. My gut is it was probably 6 months before we had a mass storage device that went out.
He's all right.
And
he was late.
It was,
yeah.
who did the first?
No, we did the DF-32, I think. DF-32.
Was it Poletnik?
Yeah, Steve Poletnik. Yeah. Bigfoot.
He started it, but Krishna finished it.
That's oh, really?
Steve was on the phone to his stockbroker most of the time.
That's right.
Yeah, we were not all stars back then.
That's right. We had a few losers.
We had Steve Poletnik and...
The other guy with the glasses.
Oh, Malcolm?
Malcolm.
Yeah. Malcolm Fritz, who we called Malfunction.
Yeah. We're talking about loser.
Yeah?
Edit.
But this name made, I think this is a regression, but going back to the spirit issue, what continually surprises me about looking back then is, if you look around the room here now, you see a bunch of fiercely independent, very cantankerous old farts. The fact that we could all get together and not kill each other and do something productive back then is what surprises me. Because if you get this many kind of personalities together in a group today, there's bedlam. For, I mean, anarchy will happen because they kill the manager.
But I think we were just as... I don't think our personalities have changed.
I don't think they have.
Oh, I think so. I think we're all very much the same.
Look, yeah, but there was one thing that was going is a lot of people here respect the other people here.
Yeah.
You know, they're independent all, and they scream and argue and holler, but you still go along.
One of the beauties of that time was there wasn't enough people.
That's right.
So if anybody said, I'll do something, nobody said, you're in my space.
Yeah. That's you right. were too damn busy.
That's right. We had too many jobs.
There's two types of things that strike me about that organization. One was, and it's a model that lasted, in my case, for almost about three machines. And that is, it was a project environment. This association of people was not an administrative group. It was a project group. It had one job, and that was to build the machine and ship it. Yeah, I mean, but it was to build a machine and ship it. And by the way, I don't really care whether you like me or not, as long as we ship the machine in the time that we're going to.
And
the point is, at the end of that period of time, be it the 12-month you suckered management on, or the 16 months you met, you put your head up and said, okay, what do you want to do next? If you did well on the machine, you wanted to go off to another group or start some other career, you know, like have lobotomy with software.
I'll be real dumb and go into manufacturing like you found it.
And you make sure the guy got his connection and moved on to his other job. And then if you had another machine to do, you'd assemble another team. And very often some of the people that you'd assemble that machine would be people from manufacturing or field service that had come to work on the last machine. They were great places to raid for manpower.
But what you say is true at one level for your perspective, but at the same time, Roger and Andy were really driving to build a system because that option a month, the disk effort had to go on, the comm options had to go on. So there really was a strong effort to build a system environment around that machine with peripheral devices and tie that together.
Yeah. Well, what Jim says is true because he and I were working for Starkey on the VT-50 and the 52, and him and Chuck got the idea for the PDQ, remember, which became the 1160, and he and I were working together, and he said, Chuck, I hate to leave you, but I think this is important. I said, Jim, if you think that's important, go do the goddamn job. Remember, Jim? And he took off with, what was Chuck's last name? I can't remember. Chuck Kamen, and they went off and did the 1160, and Tom and I were in bullshit that they deserted us. Because we thought, hey, that's the right thing to do for the company. Keeps Chuck and Jim happy. We may be hurting in our project, but hey, it's still the right thing to do.
Clayton got even with me on that one.
Okay.
I canceled the machine he had going, Chuck and I did. And he gave me the same group to build a new machine.
That's right.
But
then he got Thomas when he was in Albuquerque.
So how has the industry changed today compared to 1970?
Point in terms of the projects I want to deal with. And it's part of what you say when there were very few people. We had a project title called Project Engineer. It was the most important thing in the world. Nowhere in the company is there a job classification called Project Engineer. So Project Engineer could be, a senior technician who owned an option. It could be a degree engineer who had two people working with him to do a processor. It could be one engineer alone, but he ran that project as the project engineer, and he called the shots in drafting, layout, and when things went bad, he owned it.
That's right. The only one who owned the system was Roger, because he owned the CPU, Dave owned the mechanics, Tom owned the disk stuff, John owned the software stuff, Hamill owned the memory, somebody owned the power supply, and Steve Polidnik, Malcolm.
We never figured out who that was either.
That's right. But that was what Jim said. And in the time, there's 15 of us, and there were 6 technicians, and there was 9 engineers. And like Jim said, the project, you had the project title, and you had your project, and nobody knew who was doing what there.
Yeah.
And that's a lot different than it is today.
So how's it changed today?
Draw those types. I think those structures today still exist for a new system. You'll end up with power group, power packaging group, logic, memory design. Yeah.
They're whole groups.
But they're whole groups.
More administrative.
But even in those groups, there are subgroups that do those functions.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is you have a perfect example. In the 5x5, you have a product manager. And remember, I was the 4th one here when that useless job. You have a design engineering manager, okay? And you have CSSE nowadays. You have a bunch of people sitting down, and they're representing whole groups behind
them. Okay. Well, one of the things, I suppose, the designer in most cases now, he's so dependent on CAD tools, layout tools, other services, that he cannot take a design, bring the component in, and ship it out the door on a board. There's just too many other groups that are involved in validating this design.
But he used to do the interface with all those groups. Nowadays, they don't let the designers do the interface. There's usually administrators for both sides doing the interface. So the guy who lays out the board has his boss, and the designer who's doing the system has his boss, and the two bosses talk, and the two guys who are important don't get to talk as much nowadays as they used to and resolve the problem. That's the hell of a difference.
Situation.
That's all.
And you just sort of maybe make it happen.
I heard the 1160 mentioned. I've always wondered why that machine didn't have 22 bits.
Ask Jim.
Like the ones that had just come before.
There's the designer right there.
Because when Gordon, my manager promised it to Gordon Bell, my manager never told me. And Gordon was pissed. He came up the lab one day and wanted to know why it wasn't a 22-bit machine. I said, huh? Never got passed along. Gordon expected it to be, and it never came through my management. We were a bit late on that machine. That was one of the first machines that we wandered through kilobytes of programming. Microprogramming.
Yeah, but we must have sold those 3 or 4.
We sold a few of them.
They're still the fastest PDP-8 in the world, though, when you load the right microcode into them.
Both customers love.
That was true. It was. It was. Oh, manufacturing is so like that. They used to have a diagnostic control module that you could run in the microcode, which would allow you to isolate failures. Aguadir used to like that module an awful lot. Unlike some of the other PDP-11s where they had piled up spares, they never had it for the 60s. Instead for the 60, what they had was 100 units piled up in the Z storage. So they get out of the business.
What would you take home?
Huh? I never wanted a machine. Still don't. Not at home.
That's interesting. You have a computer at all at home?
No.
Neither do I. How many people here have a computer at home?
I got one my kids and my wife use. I refuse to use it. I
only have a little in my house.
Yeah. Oh, I have a terminal remote.
I don't even have that.
No, I don't have an AM program. I had it when we were in Albuquerque. Hooked up the machine.
I have a Radio Shack Crash 80, but I inherited it from my father-in-law, and I don't use it.
Wonder what that says.
Well, remember, we know what type of idiots do those machines. They're seated around.
Well, let's ask a different question. How many people have a terminal in their home that's hooked to a computer somewhere?
Yeah.
Well, I'm the last holdout.
No,
one.
No, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, all right.
How often do those people use?
See, it's silly to have a computer at home if you can have a terminal hooked to the world.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Did you know that the PDP-11 was a kit? I have a friend in Canada who built his own PDP-11 from absolute scratch with pin backplane wiring for the boards.
Where did Andy come from?
And he had the most beautiful brushed stainless steel front panel with real toggle switches.
Sounds like a PDP.
What was the Builder Kit company that Andy came from? Because we did
Heathkit.
We did 11s for Heathkit.
Yeah.
Remember Kenny?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they did. I don't know if they do now, but they did.
Yeah. We got a complete 11 from these guys.
That's my old AR 1500.
We did big, solid, green front panels for Foxborough, if I remember.
Where do you all see the future? Where do you all see the future?
Hey, guys.
Where do you all see the future? What's the next big technological breakthrough? We haven't seen anything in the way of the hardware end of it, perhaps, and to a large extent, software, for sure. We haven't seen any new breakthroughs since the automation of spreadsheets, perhaps. Where do you all see the future going?
Real I.O. devices, and Thomas can tell you about that.
Well, I like the entree. I don't know if I can say anything.
Oh, that's an instigation. That my comment was an instigation to provoke conversation.
Well, I would say, I'm sure everybody here has their own idea of the answer to that. But okay. In my case, I think we have to go back to using the human brain as computing and not this stupid machinery.
Okay.
And the way you do that is you hook the human much more tightly to the problem. And so that's what I said at the beginning of this meeting. I call it multidimensional I.O., and the subtitle is presence. And the notion is that you don't work the machine, you work the problem. Because the problem is just sitting there, and you push on it, or pull it, or massage it, or whistle at it, or talk to it, or have it push on you, or have it make a noise at you, or lean on it, or make you sick, or whatever you do. And I think But that's just my hot button for today.
No, it isn't. I somehow feel I heard this speech when you were working at VT50.
Oh, yes. It's been a hot button for years in a sort of a generalized way. But I'm trying to say is that I'm not necessarily right. That's not necessarily the breakthrough of the future. And certainly I've been struggling with I.O. for my entire career. Made some successes and mostly failures.
But you got to use the humans with the machines a hell of a lot better than we are nowadays.
But you see, a brain isn't built to read characters on paper or do something about it. And yet, that's the metaphor we use. You know, keyboard, mouse, screen. Well, that's dumb. I mean, that's insane. Of course it's not at another level, because it's what you can do, and it's cheap, and it's an extension of what you got on the paper. So, you know.
Okay.
But, I don't know how many of you people in this room have used mechanical CAD-CAM systems, but there. Awful, even though they've come quite a distance. I mean, you take hold of a knob and you adjust the axis and you decide, well, let's see, if I put the axis here and then I rotate it about X, it'll look right, so you put the axis there and it does. You should just reach in and grab hold of the damn thing and turn it. You know?
Yeah.
And like that.
Yeah.
Or in the case of the oil company, you look at a boob tube and you see all this sort of hazy block of stuff, which is the ground, and you see the fault lines in the oil wells, you should just put on your glove, reach into the ground, and where the rock's hard, you feel it hard. And where the rock's soft, you feel it soft. And where the hard overlays the soft is where the oil is. What was the problem?
Yeah.
You know, and if you've got a sliced CAT scan of your brain, and it's got 28 slices, 500 by 500, you know, you should just be able to reach in, and if you touch the pituitary gland, it goes beep! You know? Or you should be able to put on your goggles and climb inside the molecule and look around for the carbon atom. Or the gene splice. I mean, what the hell?
Okay. There, let that be a lesson to you.
I'm sorry, I'm marketing.
Tom, I don't want it to be hard.
He's close to right,
trying
though.
To sell
him. I got to say one more, just time. We've done at a show in June in Texas somewhere, and this little Japanese fellow, who's a young guy, he said, have you heard of the Sony Watchman for Information Detectives? I said, what's that? He says, well, you know, Sherlock Holmes has this magnifying glass. And he wanders around and he looks at the world. Okay? And he says, what you want is a Watchman, Sony Watchman screen, right? A little color screen. And what you see through the magnifying glass is whatever the synthetic world is you want to create. So if you want to look and find the carbon atom, you just look around, oh yeah, there it is, yeah, see? Or if you're looking at Mars and you sort of turn the zoom knob and say, there's Triton, yeah, right? See? Or you look down at the table and there's the flea, and then you turn it a little tighter and there's his stomach, and you turn it a little tighter and there's his parasites, and you turn it a little tighter and there's his mitochondria, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought, now there you are, and Sony's going to have it, and are we? See? I mean, they're working on that.
See, there's a part of me that hopes that never happens. I can just imagine what happens at the porn video stores.
you would get a very practical that way.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, I don't know.
Okay.
Well,
let's
see. Who else?
I'll answer that a little differently. One of the things Tom's talking about is I look at as you know, the things that we call workstations today, but
yeah, they're gone.
But it's beyond the workstation. It's getting the things that an engineer has to do today to design are so complex, he has to have the tools. So tools that really bring information to that person, whether they do it, you know, physically like Tom said, or in some other manner. But I think one of our problems today, we talk about complexities of design, is the designing new VAC systems cannot be done by one person. They're so complex that it can't be done. So just in our own environment, more information to a human being to allow him to do the job has to be done, and that's one side of computing. I mean, the other thing is we are an information society, and I don't see that changing. And so just plain old computes for handling data is going to continue to go on.
It's probably more work today to learn how to use the tools than it was for us to design with pencil and paper. I mean, I brought along my idea of word processing. This is the 1970 edition handwritten engineering spec for the RK-11. See, there were no machines. We were able to do everything by hand and visualize it, draw it, and talk about it. Now you have to be smarter than we were back then just to use the damn tools.
Yeah, that's right.
Design, I had a portable CAD system at home. It was a B-size pad of vellum with a plastic, mill standard 603 or something template, and a sharp pencil.
Well, you also had to have sepias.
Yes.
You had to be able to make sepias so that you could make corrections on the next layer.
Oh, okay. I didn't need them at home.
That's very important.
I didn't need them at home. I could.
Well, that's true. You got an eraser too.
Yes.
Reluctantly.
It's either that or green wire. I was sure which was easier to use.
I've yearned for a motor, but Blasey would never buy me a motor powered eraser.
I'm not an architectural engineer, so I can't talk to the computer architectures that are coming down, but I think in terms of the processing of making computers, there's lots of potential changes. And things like optics are still a long way from being used today, and what goes beyond that. Now, what happens to computer architectures and how that's interactive with people is an area that I can address, but maybe Tom's got one handle on it for the human interface.
By the way, we gave a demo this morning of some of that stuff.
Is everybody reuned out at this point?
Yeah.
Looking a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I we could probably run all night talking about non-technology related things. And there's lots of great old stories, I wonder how many of you folks, were most of you folks were at the 10-year party?
Yeah.
That was a real knockdown, drag out, drunken brawl. That was fun.
You'd be interested to know where a lot of those people are. I think it'd be tremendous if we could actually get together.
Yeah, yeah. Hey.
Yes. Katie's up in New Hampshire someplace.
I really would vote. I mean, I'd put money in the pot or do something like that if we could reconstruct.
Well,
it's like
the old Telco group had a reunion.
Say again?
The old Telco group had a reunion about 6 months ago.
Where are you now?
Where am I? Where am I?
Mike Minch. Well, Minch is in Canada. He wasn't at that thing, but a lot of Katie's old original Telco people.
John, if you want to get the lists or... we can probably help you from today's list, determining who's around. And I got that old edition of the 10th anniversary Deck World party that shows who is still around, who's left the company.
I think we'd like to bring some people that left because they were so much part of the organization that you ignore them.
The Telco party had
as the auto company.
Yeah,
auto company people too. Yeah,
because I mean, Roger and Andy and Julius and.
Do you have a staff meeting?